we are thought to be human doings rather than human beings. And so we have to make sure that when we think about who we are, it starts here. And so you really have to have some struggle in that that question, where am I with the Lord? As you know, I'm married to Ruth Ann. I had to make sure to give her, isn't she pretty?
Yes.
We just watched for a while. So Ruth Ann and I were married back in 2002. But in April of 2000, we were dating and we were out on outreach to a homeless population downtown. And this guy came up to me and he said, "Hey, is this your girlfriend?" We had just been dating for a very short time. I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what we were. And so I said, "Well, she's my friend." Oh, my goodness. Worst thing I could have possibly said. So her, now if you know Ruth Ann, she wears her emotions on her face. She was immediately like, "What is this?" She was not confident in our relationship. And so later on, we had to have what we called the DTR, the Define the Relationship Talk. We're sitting in the car at my old church, and we're just sitting there, and she's fidgeting with some of my playing cards that I had in the car, and I can tell she's not happy. And she, I don't remember how the whole conversation started, but I said, "Hey, so what are we?" Because it was very clear that something was going on. And she said, "Well, I don't know. What do you think we are?" And I said, "Well, I don't really want to date somebody unless I have a possibility of marrying this person." Which was, I was thinking, it's kind of a risk, right? I don't know how she's going to respond. And her response was basically, "Yeah, me too. I want to get married." And then she said, "I want 3 kids, a house, and a dog." So the first thing we had to establish is we had to define our relationship for us to have confidence in who we were with each other. So that's the first challenge I would give you. You have to be confident in your relationship with Jesus, that you are his, if you're going to be able to have your identity be first in Christ. Because all of these other things, you know, are going to change. Your identity over time, you're going to be a mom, and you're going to be this, you're going to be that. But that identity with Jesus is that thing that's going to be the most long-lasting. So the first thing we have to look at is who we were. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. "And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath like the rest of mankind." So we have to start there. We have to say, that's who we were if we're not in Christ. And so if you haven't responded to the gospel of Jesus yet, this is where you are. But you don't have to stay there, because that's not where the text ends. Verse 5, "But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved." You are alive together in Christ. You are in Christ. He is with you. That's your primary foundational identity. Any other hats you wear, any other identities that you put on, that is your foundational identity, and it is secure. You are alive in Christ. But then he goes on and he says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand, that we should walk in them." Oftentimes we look at this verse and we focus on the created for good works. And we miss this really important idea. You are his workmanship. So you are saved, you are in Christ, and then you are his workmanship. That word actually is the word poema, which is where we get the word poem. If you think about what poema means, it's a creation, it's a work, it's like a poem that's crafted. It's something that's created. So you are created, you are crafted, you are formed, you are intentionally and intricately made. That's your identity, and you're in Christ. That's before you're a mom. You are in Christ, and you are his workmanship. And I want to brainstorm a little bit as to what that might mean. When we think about creating something or crafting something, what goes in, somebody who bakes cakes, what goes into to baking a cake? What do you have to do first? What's that? Measure, like the ingredients and things, okay? Even before you do that, what do you have to have in mind? An idea of what it's going to be, right? So that you don't just start putting stuff together and it ends up as a 3. That's kind of what evolutionists believe, by the way. But how do we, when we start thinking through creating something or crafting something, we have an idea in mind and we have a purpose, right? What about decor? So Ruthann picked this up. She said, that looks good. I wouldn't know. But that's one of her gifts. So when you think about crafting or decor, what goes into thinking through that? What's that?
A theme.
A theme? Uh-huh.
Colors.
Things you like, and the color schemes you like. What about, you know, this being in a kitchen versus in a living room? How does context play into that? Kind of the ambiance that you're trying to create, right? The whole idea is intentionality. It's very intentional. When you're going to create something or craft something, you're very intentional. What about painting a masterpiece? What goes into that? Anything's fine.
Inspiration.
Inspiration, okay. What's that? Some talent, some gifting, knowing what you're looking for and how to get there. Some creativity. You know, there's even some interpretation. This supposedly is beautiful. I don't see it. But nevertheless, there's a perspective from the painter in creating something, wants to create something that they view as beautiful. What about a poem? This is Lord Byron. She walks in beauty like the night. Cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright, meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellow to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. What goes into that? What's it about? Anything's fine. What's that? Who's it about, you think? Is it about a person? Yeah, probably someone that Lord Byron knows and loves, and there's this sense of wanting to make that person feel valued or whatever it might be, at least in this particular kind of poem. There's creativity. There's all those things we talked about before go into a poem. I want you to keep in mind, this word here, poem, comes from poema, workmanship. When you create something, when you craft something, when you put something together, you put your whole heart into it, and you write it, and you bake it, or whatever you're doing, you're doing it as something you're proud of and something that you are intentionally creating for joy, for your own joy. You are his workmanship. That's who you are first. You are in Christ and you are his workmanship. He has crafted you and intricately made you, and he values you and he loves you. You have to keep that in mind first before you look at your identity simply as moms. It's in Christ first. All right. So there's your first confidence in your identity. Before being a mom, your identity is in Christ. Now, that's not separate. It's not like I'm a mom and I'm in Christ. It's I'm in Christ and he's called me to be a mom. Right? All right, so here's a question you guys can discuss later. And remind me how much time I have? Till 20 after?
Yeah.
Okay. Why is it dangerous to get our value or sense of identity first by our roles, what we do, rather than who we are in Christ? What happens if we simply identify ourselves with what we do? Well, then what happens when you can't do that anymore? Right? That's the first one. Second one, confidence in your calling. God chose to make you a mom. Not an accident. He's very purposeful in what he does. He's the one who gives life. And the easiest kind of low-hanging fruit for that would be Psalm 139. And I'd like us to focus on this, not just on the baby side. We'll get to that in a second. But notice verse 13 of 139. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. Now think about the fact that it says my mother's womb. Not somebody else's mother's womb. It's my mom. That's because that baby was placed in a mom purposefully. So when God creates a person, he doesn't just go, okay, well, I'll find someone who's willing and able. Here we go. Okay, you'll have a baby. That's not how he does it. He knows who he wants to make, and he chooses the mom he's going to place that baby into. He knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. This is talking about this person who's been born, who is fearfully and wonderfully made, but put into my mother's womb intentionally by God. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me. When as yet there was none of them. So So as you think about your kids that have been placed into your life, whether you are adopted or you have adopted kids or they were in your own womb, you have been chosen to be the parent for that child because God is purposeful. He knitted me together in my mother's womb. But as we think about as we grow, you also were children at some point. You were placed in a mother's womb, and you were made in secret, and God's eyes saw your unformed substance, and in your book were written every one of the days that were formed for you, which includes your role as moms. Not an accident. When God crafted you and made you, he had intended all the things that you have in your life, all the blessings you've had, all the challenges you've faced, all of those things he knew of, and they were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for you, including your mother. Not an accident. You were called. You were called and chosen to do that. Now, we think about forming something and being intricately made for something. One of the things that Ruthanne and I find to be quite romantic between us is we both use mouth guards because we stress each other out, so we grind our teeth at night. But the way this works is you have these mouth guards, and you know, if you've ever used these, you boil them, and then you put them in your mouth, and they kind of, anybody, you don't want to have to admit this. But they mold around your teeth, and so they are formed specific to you. They're formed specific to your mouth design. Now, every once in a while, it doesn't happen very often anymore, but when we had mouth guards that were similar, and it was dark, it would be very weird to grab one, put it in your mouth, and go, oh, that is not the right one, right? Because it wasn't made for you. It wasn't intricately formed for you. So I want you to keep in mind, you were formed. You were made intricately the way you are for the roles that God has called you to fulfill. And as a mom, he has made you to do this. He's called you to it. It is a calling that I would say is the or one of the greatest callings that there possibly could be. You are raising the next generation of worshipers. You are giving birth. When you go back to Genesis, you talk about what the original plan was. It was to multiply the earth with worshipers of God. You get to do that. And God calls you to be a part of that process by his grace. He's called you to it. It's an important calling. And I would say in this world today that does not value motherhood, just realize those are lies. Satan would love to lie to you to say that being a mom and focusing on your kids is not success. It's just an outright lie. Don't believe it. It's important. You have confidence in your calling. God chose to make you a mom. Question. Have you ever felt like maybe God made a mistake in making you a mom? You yell at your kids and you're like, oh, I should have never had kids. Or something happens and you see another mom doing something, you're like, why can't I be more like that mom? God didn't make you that mom. He made you who you are. And he's giving you the scriptures to guide you to be the mom that he wants you to be. How does Psalm 139 correct that thinking? That's something you guys can talk about later. And then finally, you could have confidence in your competency. God will give you what you need. He will equip you. He will give you all of the skills, he'll give you all the energy, whatever you need, he will give it to you. And when you ask the question, you know, what kind of skills does a mom need? You can answer that better than I can, but I was delighted to see that a news channel had kind of figured out some of it.
Over time, a study by Welch's Grape Juice found an average mom clocks 98 hours a week, making it equal to working at 2.5 jobs full time. The survey of 2,000 American moms found on average their day starts at 6:23 a.m. and doesn't stop until 8:31 p.m. That's a 14-hour day, 7 days a week. And moms only get 1 hour and 7 minutes of me time, according to the research. Wine, babysitters, and drive-through snacks are said to be things that get them through these long days. So there you have it. Being a mom is literally more than a full-time job. We're sharing the news on Facebook this morning and thanking moms for all that they do. And if you can too, please come on over and tag someone who you think you can check this out.
Oh, she won't let me move past this. Okay. So does that resonate? You know, very little me time, very little sleep sometimes. Anybody start your morning before 6? Oh, good, I'm glad. Some of you do. So As you start thinking about skills that are required to go into being a mom, what are some of the things, because their whole argument in the article, we've seen this before, the argument in the article is that if you were to actually do this as a job, it would be 2 full-time jobs. So what kind of professions mirror the things that you do as moms? Let's just think about that. Maybe security guard, right? Police officer. Sometimes you have to act sort of that way to separate people in conflict, right? Baker. What are some other things?
Taxi driver.
Nurse. Yeah, okay. Counselor.
Janitor.
Okay. Sometimes accountant. You know, all of those things, you have to do that all the time, and you have to be able to switch between them in a moment's notice. So the question is, how can you possibly continue to be competent doing all of those things? Well, this is not about motherhood, but it's a principle that I want us to look at. Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and he's talking about the reason why he has confidence in God's calling on his life, and he's talking about the people of Corinth as being sort of that trophy that give evidence to the fact that he's done what he's supposed to do. And here's what he says. Are we beginning to commend ourselves again? Or do we need, as some do, letters of recommendation to you or from you? You yourselves are our letter of recommendation, written on our hearts to be known and read by all. And you show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. Here's what he's getting at. The evidence of the fact that he was doing what he was supposed to do, and the evidence of the fact that there was power and competency in what he did, was there were lives that were changed. That's the point that he's making in this first part. Then we get to verse 4. Such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God. So in other words, the product, the result, is our confidence. Your lives were changed, right? But he recognizes it's not because of him. Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything is coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. So where's his confidence coming from? Is it from himself? Himself? No. Where's it coming from? It's from coming from God. His sufficiency is not in ourselves. It's from God. The reason why we are able to do what we are and we stand in confidence is not because of us. It's because of what God did to equip us to do what he called us to do. And that is not different from moms. Your competency, what you're able to do because he has called you, he also will equip you to do the work that you need to do. Now, does that mean that immediately, you know, genetically, you know how to do everything? You'd know better than I do how it takes training and learning, right? How you need mentors and people to come in to help you. But in those moments where you need something from God and say, God, you know, your baby's been crying. I love we went to, before Grace was born, it's so great that we did this because we would have thrown her out the window otherwise. We went to the parenting classes prior. And they told us, they said, after a short time, you'll be at home, your kid will be crying, and they said, do not shake your baby. And they kept talking about it. Do not shake your baby. I'm like, why are these people talking so much about shaking? I'm not going to shake my baby. I love my child. Folks, we ended up in the parking lot of the hospital about a week after Grace was born, calling the, I'm embarrassed to say this, but calling the birth ward to say, will you take her back? I'm not joking. We actually did that. And that was our way of not shaking the baby. We didn't know what we were doing, but you know what? The Lord made us competent, we hope. If you've met Grace, you'll know. But it's not because we're sufficient in ourselves. It's because God gave us what we needed to get through that. And he will do that for you. He will give you what you need if you will go to him and ask. Which leads us to 1 John 5, which I believe is on one of these tables, or maybe all of them. And this is the confidence that we have toward him. That if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we ask, or if we know that he hears us in whatever we ask, we know that we have the request that we asked of him. Question. Do you think it is in God's will for you to be a good mom? To be a godly mom? So if we take that, we say, if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we will have a request that we've asked of him. Can we be confident that if we are seeking him and we are asking him for things that are in his best interest and in our best interest and in the best interest of our kids becoming worshipers, will he hear us? And will he give us what we ask for? Absolutely. Absolutely. So you can have that confidence in your competency, not because of who you are, but because of what God can do for you. So, confidence in your competency. God will give you what you need. Here's the question. What challenge are you facing right now as a mom that you feel ill-equipped to face? We've all got issues where we look at it and we say, this is a mountain I don't feel like I can climb. This is a situation that I don't feel like we can deal with. You know, to be real honest, Ruthanne and I have dealt with some of the things with our kids recently in the past year or so, some of it related to COVID, that we looked at and we said, I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't know how we're going to respond to these issues. And God, by his grace, has come in and he has provided everything we've needed to be able to respond to those things. It's been painful. There's been a lot of hurt. There's been a lot of nights where you kind of sit there and you just go, oh, Lord, are we doing this right? Please don't let us mess up your kids. But he's always given us the strength to get through whatever we needed to get through. And he'll do that because he's a good father and he loves you. And because your first identity is you're in Christ. You're his. So I hope that encourages you. You've got some questions, I believe, on the papers. Michelle, are those questions on the papers?
Yes, they are there.
So is this where they get in the groups and discuss them?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, if you guys want to discuss those questions, those three questions on the basis of the topics, I'm going to let you do that and just say thank you for letting me join you. It's been a privilege to be here with you.